to speak?
If they're ready for us.
Yeah. Have you got the recordings going?
I hope so. Can somebody look at this and see if it's recording?
I'll look. See if I'm there. I have eyes, but...
This is a new machine.
There's a light on or something.
There's supposed to be a flashing or a red light or something.
I got 3 red lights.
Well, then that's probably it then.
There's one by this button on the second row down here. And then there's 2 up here.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Well, we hope.
Yeah.
Would somebody like to shut that door so that we don't have so much noise coming in from the hallway? Thank you. Okay, so we have this small breakout session that is specifically for parents, and one of the things that we decided to do is to hear a little bit about the STEM programs that are operated by the NFB Jernigan Institute, which are opportunities for blind and visually impaired kids to get some hands-on exposure in the sciences that often they're not allowed to do at school, and to try to therefore encourage the kids and their families to go back to their districts and really push to get more opportunities in the sciences. And one of our Illinois students, Andrea Kataquiz, went to one of the STEM programs with her mom, and they are going to talk about what that experience was, what it meant, how it's changed their, what she's been exposed to in school subsequently. So however you guys want to start. If
I closed the door, but
it doesn't want to stay shut.
It's a handicapped accessibility where it automatically opens.
Aha, right. Can it be? Is there a door stop?
Oh, there's a switch. I turned it off. It was pulled open. It was not pulled open.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Thanks much. So, Andrea and Cecile, I turn it over to you guys. Speak up, so, or maybe step towards the middle of the room so people can hear you.
So, if you can really.
Hi there.
Good afternoon. My name is Andrea Kessler. I'm 11 years old, and I am a sixth grade student at Albright Middle School in Villa Park, Illinois. I am here today to talk about my experience at the STEM to You program. The STEM, or Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math to You, is a program of the National Center for Blind Youth in Science, a part of NFB in partnership with museums and science centers throughout the country. Each program accepts 20 blind elementary and 10 high school students that will participate in hands-on STEM learning. I was lucky to enjoy the program held in San Francisco from March 3rd to the 5th of this year. The first 2 days were held at the Hotel Whitcomb. We started the day with introductions and meeting the other participants. We had fun problem-solving activities together. On the second day, the activities were based on a story about protecting and rescuing a bear. First, we had to make a sturdy tower out of tape and note cards to protect the bear from a crocodile. Next, we made a flying disc from recycled materials so the bear's friends could locate him. And lastly, in our group, to make a fast car from various scrap materials so his friends could get him. The last day of the program was held at the Exploratorium, a hands-on museum of science, art, and human perception, located in Pier 15 in San Francisco. We learned about sound and vibration through different activities. I brought with me some of the things we made. I'll be sharing those at the end. The participants were also given time to explore the museum with their families. Among the exhibits there, my most favorite was a tactile exhibit of tide patterns that differ depending on the moon phase. It was a fun and learning-filled event. I would like to attend another STEM program in the future if given the chance. I know your children will enjoy it too. If you are interested, you can apply online at www.blindscience.org. There's no registration fee. Now I will be sharing the things we did. I have a piece of string here that I will use. My mom will cover her ears, and I will take this piece of string around her head and over her hands. Though we probably won't hear it, I'm strumming the string, and my mom can hear a pretty strange sound. When I strum the string, the noise from the string echoes against the bones of your hand, so it makes the noise louder. Next, I have a noisemaker that is made from, I have a note card stapled to a craft stick. The craft stick has an eraser on either end, and over the two erasers, stretched across the two erasers, is a rubber band that's about maybe a quarter of an inch long. I'll hold the string and I can, oops. It's because it makes that noise because wind travels through the rubber band. And the last thing I have here is a flute. So I have a piece of pipe with three holes drilled into it. I have a little round container that with its bottom cut out and a hole punched into it. The container is fitted onto this piece of pipe, and over the top of the container is a piece of glove that's held in place by a rubber band. I have a straw in the hole punched into my container, and I can make a little noise.
That's cool. That is awesome.
Good job.
Yeah.
I was doing all this, the parents were also busy with doing their own thing. My mom made this. It is a sheet showing, it is a piece of cardboard showing the what the different tides, what the li- wait, oops, what the different moons look like. I had.
It's the opposite. It's not squeezing.
Yeah, on the parents' side, during the STEM program, where the kids have their own activities, the parents were also given, you know, full day activities to learn about, you know, how to adapt, you know, how to teach your kids science, how to adapt like simple things, cardboard, so they can learn science. And they give you a lot of, what do you call this? Resources. Yeah, and resources. You get to meet people, talk about how they help their children with their, you know, science homeworks, math homework. So it's not just the students who learn during the program. The parents were also, you know, given a chance to meet people, learn about resources, and how to learn and help their children learn science.
So this is when you can't see?
Yeah. This is a sample of one of the activities for the parents. They gave us, like, a chance to make this lunar phase to teach the children, you know, how it is.
So you can't
quarter.
See.
Yeah, this is the new moon.
This is the new moon.
Mm-hmm.
Here is the quarter. Here's the half moon.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call this one?
The gibbous?
This is the gibbous moon.
The full moon.
And here is the full moon. And then it starts to become less and less.
Raining. It's a raining period.
You get to see less and less of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have...
Another craft we learned to make is a representation of how you can teach your children, your blind child, the relative distance of the planets to the sun, the bell there being the sun, and the planets.
Mercury,
mm-hmm.
Venus, Earth,
Mars.
Mars. I was just making sure.
Okay.
What was this?
The asteroid belt?
This is supposed to be the asteroid belt.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jupiter. It's starting to get pretty far.
Mm-hmm.
Saturn.
Yeah. See how far it is from the sun anyway, right?
Uranus and
Neptune and Pluto. So it's also a learning activity for the parents. So it would be a nice it would be nice for parents and, you know, kids to attend a STEM program.
And it's fun.
Especially it's fun.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
And the next person I want to introduce is Julietta Meyer, and her daughter Emma is active in IABS, the Illinois Association of Blind Students. So since Emma's about ready to go off to college next year, we thought Julietta's been through many stages of parenting, not all of them yet, but many. And so we thought she would maybe talk a bit and lead kind of a discussion among parents about some of the issues and concerns that everybody comes up with at various times. So I'm going to just turn it over to Julietta.
Oh, thank you. Hi. I think this is such a new group except for a few. I thought I would know everyone. Julietta Meyer. My daughter is 18. Senior in high school. I'm a nurse. My husband's a doctor. You know, we planned. Like, we planned our marriage. We planned when we were going to have children. And, you know, we thought we knew it all. We thought we were so smart and the way you plan. And I was 29 when Emma was born. It was just so exciting. You know, you're having your first child, and it's great, and she was 8 pounds, 19 and a half inches. and perfect, just glowing with all this hair. And anyway, a couple hours later, my husband said, something's wrong with her eyes. Something is different. She can't open her eyes. And I said, stop making me nervous. Let me enjoy the moment. So later on, you know, his friend came. They looked at her eyes. And, well, since then, we started researching what can we do to make this the best person ever. How do we make her the best she can be? So we started with so many resources. I'm from Morris, Illinois. I had to go to Joliet, Chicago Lighthouse. But Child and Family Connections, they started me in a route where I thought was a good beginning. Went to Easter Seals, and you know, all those years of 0 to 3, you're doing so much for your children. We went to Lapsit at the library. We went to Kinder Music. Does anybody know Kinder Music? Mm-hmm. It's another type of fun music thing. We went to the park. You know, you go to these parks, and they're climbing, and they're getting splinters. And very few programs that I could find where the parents had the goals that I had for my children. Emma was, let's see, she was probably 9 months. No. She was 13 months when I had my second child. And then Emma was 2.5 when I had my third child. And Emma is blind and my two other children are sighted. But they are the same challenge, the same exact challenge. I'd have to say my son is even a bigger challenge. So from that 0 to 3 phase, all of the things and emotions that you go through and you're questioning yourself, it was the same with all three of my children. It wasn't just Emma. It was, how are they going to succeed? What are they going to do when they get older? Will they learn how to read when they're in first grade or kindergarten? So really, it's the same. You know, having three children, I was able to see that they all have challenges. They just are different challenges. So thankfully, we made it through this 0 to 3 phase. She started this pre-K program at the public school, and it was just with, you know, regular kids that may have a speech impediment or had other issues that were not as obvious as Emma's. It was a great program. I learned a lot. But I still was very insecure about her future and how am I going to get her through high school, college, you know, all those questions you have about all the expectations I had for her. Will they still be the same? Will I be able to help her get there? I mean, obviously, I come from a family. We all have professions. We work. That's what you do. You get a job after college, and you support yourself, and you know, dating, and eventually marriage, and children, or not marriage, but you have a career. So, you know, she was between 3 and 6. We struggled with the reading, the Braille. We didn't have Bell yet. Darn, I wish we did. Darn, but I did. We did find some helpful places. You know, Chicago Lighthouse had an amazing program. Again, I did do a lot of programs at the Chicago Lighthouse where I left very depressed. I was very discouraged. You know, driving from Morris to Chicago, 1.5 hours, and I would look at other parents around me, and they were okay. Oh, my child's not going to read. And they wouldn't go and like, no, you learn this Braille. They would just sit back and watch. And I just said, I cannot do this anymore. Cannot go to the Chicago Lighthouse. It's too depressing. I need to move forward. And my vision teacher, well, Emma's TBI, not mine, but I guess she taught me Braille as well. She was great. She was very positive. She had another student that had already graduated from high school. He went to college. So she knew that the possibilities were endless for Emma. I still didn't know. I was very insecure and the questions. So when she was about 7 or 8, somebody called me and invited us to the STEM program, which I think it's changed a lot since then. And they said, oh, yeah, your mom is invited to go. And she talked on the phone with someone, and I have no idea how she was in contact with these people. But I could see her on the phone. She's 8 years old, and I'm like, okay, they want to talk to me. I took the phone. They asked me a few questions. They said, you guys are great candidates for this program. So I went, and that STEM program was not just learning, you know, science and different ways to adapt the education for my daughter, but I met other parents that had the goals that I had. They really wanted their children to go to college, to live independently, and they actually felt that it was possible. You know, finally I met a group where I really felt I was fitting into, but then it was hard. They compared each other. Oh, my daughter has this great technology, you know, from California. And I'm here in Illinois where we are broke. My daughter didn't have a computer yet, and she was still, you know, poking the fingers on the Perkins Brailler, barely, you know, she's 8. She's sort of getting it. But it was a great experience. I have to say, I loved going to that. We were at the Jernigan Institute, were you?
No, they were in
San Francisco. Oh, wow. What a great experience. I have to say that was a turning point for Emma. Emma became a completely different person. Her outlook was, I mean, much more confident. She was able to advocate for herself in difficult situations. We had so many social issues everywhere we went. We were a very active family. You know, we hike, we swim, we boat, we ski, we go to water parks. Water parks were always the big problem. Your daughter can't go in the pool because she's blind. So we go to the water park shortly after that trip. And I told Debbie this story before. She was up on the slide, one of the really tall slides, a water slide, and the lifeguard up there said, nope, you can't go down the slide. You're handicapped. And she said, I'm not handicapped. I'm blind, and I know how to swim. And she was up there with my two other children. They always, you know, together. So they ran down the stairs to get me. And Emma said, oh, no, we don't need mom. We need a manager. And I said, what's going on? As I'm lounging, reading my magazine. No, we need a manager. Mom, this is not just. We need to talk to someone because I know how to swim. So I knew that program had done some good for my daughter.
Wow.
She was determined. We went to this office that said manager. She told the manager with a squeaky voice, I can swim, and no one's going to stop me. And so they said, oh, you know what? That lifeguard was confused. It's really for people like that are in wheelchairs. It's not for you. And she still remembers that day. She's like, no, Mom, they do not respect blind people. I don't want to go back to that water park until we know that they respect blind people. So she was about 9, and then she came to convention, and she spoke about that. She's a little shy, though, but I think she did an okay job speaking. I think I see your daughter speaking, and she's very confident. I love your speech and your demonstrations.
I've done it before. I did it last
year. You've done it? Oh, so you've got...
I've heard different things again.
Yes. So I think that phase where they're, you know, between 0 and 3 is such a regular, everything is the same, baby. But then from 3, but I guess you do have to teach them not to do the blindisms. That was a big thing for me. Like, don't touch your eyes. You know, don't shake. Put your shoulders back. Head always up. I remember that. It was like I was a broken record. I was so...
We just yelled fingers.
Yeah.
Yes. All you have to do is say fingers. I can be in a water park with 60 kids screaming, and he hears.
And you
fingers.
Say fingers.
and
having a girl, I scream posture. And I think sometimes when we're in the room talking, I could see her go like this, which means straightening her back.
Yeah. Like mom's here.
Not even me. I mean, I think she just does it. It's ingrained.
Natural.
Yeah, there we go. Naturally.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you want.
So, but there is one story I do have to say. When I was at the Chicago Lighthouse, there were positive things, too. There was a blind social worker there. She really put me in place. She's like, you need to snap out of it. Your daughter is going to do everything everyone does. And, you know, I was still, she was probably, when I met the social worker, my daughter was 3 months old or six, you know, very baby. I still was a little hesitant.
Still.
Yes. So, but I do remember her words in my mind, trust me, she's going to do everything everybody else is doing. And you know what? When I went to the park and she climbed the to get up on the monkey bars, and she insisted on doing all the monkey bars. She had the same blisters as everyone else did. Parents would try to help her. And I would have to tell these parents, no, please don't help her. Because she has to fall. You know, your children fall. She has to fall and get back up. So she did. Junior high, we struggled again. You know, she's been through the same school with the same friends. Junior high, you know, they're teenagers. They're cool. They can't be seen with the blind child. The blind child sometimes doesn't have her hair perfect. Going to junior high dances, she insisted on going. I would drive her to the dance, drop her off, all by herself. I would go to the door, drop her off. The teachers are like, how do you do it? I said, it's not me. She wants to do it. If it was up to me, she'd stay home. Because I want to protect her. I really don't want her to get hurt and feel lonely. But she would find people to talk to. By the end of the night, she would walk out with kids. They would walk her to my car. Goodbye, Emma. See you later. And same thing with freshman, sophomore, and junior year homecoming. These kids come out of nowhere. Is Emma coming to homecoming? You know, she's never been asked by a boy yet, but I'm sure.
That's a good thing.
Trust me, there have been boys. There have been boys. She's met two very cute boys at a national convention. Thank goodness they're out of the country. One is in Canada. Oh, yes, and they did, trust me. I'm like, I was waiting up for her. But so she went to homecoming last year. High school has been, you know, you have to academically really adjust to that higher demand, writing papers, all the research. The research is so hard. Everything downloads much slower for them. She does not like. You don't know that yet?
I'm not downloading.
No. Well, she downloads her research for her, you know, science or history, and it.
I will be starting that.
Okay. Well, I will recommend things. You could call me, or you could call Emma. But Emma has she stays up late, very late. Sometimes she gets no sleep, doing her research and writing papers, and she goes to school tired. And she has learned from early on, you have to work twice as hard, and. That's just engraved in our kids now, I think, that in order to keep up with the other kids, sometimes you don't sleep. So anyway, she's done very well. She has done speech. She was on the speech team. She sings. She has done choir with so much struggle with the choir because they don't want her to fall off the stage. You know, what if she falls off the stage?
And I'm like, you get bumped and stand up.
Yes, or there was no railing on the stairs.
Well, Patrick's
and they thought, well, how is she going to do that? I said, well, she has the cane, and I promise I will not sue you if she falls. I had to, like, constantly remind them that I want her to do that by herself, and I will not sue you. But, you know, I have to sign a waiver and all of this stuff. And then for the musical, she really wanted to sing in the musical. And she did 1 year, and then the following year, they gave her 3 minutes. Because a lot of it was a dance.
Oh.
And they thought that she could not dance. But, you know, she on her own said, I don't want to do it anyway. Because I want to do choir and madrigals. And she loves speech, which I think speech gives you great skills for presenting. She probably speaks better than I do in public, even though she is shy. Well, then finally we met, well, we met Debbie a long time ago, but we did not know too much about Freedom Link. Freedom Link, I think they introduced Emma, was it 7th or 8th grade?
I think she applied in like 8th grade.
8th grade.
Yeah.
She applied, she interviewed, and then the day came and she said, I'm not going. And that's just Emma. That's her opinion. She has an opinion and she's, you know what, I'm too busy. So we didn't go initially. And then the following year, on her own, she said, I'm going, and this is the date, and I have to be there at this time. And so then she started going to Freedom Link.
Which some people may not know what that is.
Freedom Link is once a month on a Saturday from 12:30 to 4:30, and you learn independent travel skills. Very advanced travel skills, because you have a blind mentor, and you're in the city. You're taking the train, the bus, shopping. I think they actually went fun shopping and then some grocery shopping.
Yeah.
Go eat at restaurants.
Everything. Fast food restaurants, carry your tray, find the trash can.
Yeah, so I think Freedom Link improved her travel skills. She was doing great at school, but we live in a small town. Everything is quiet. There's never traffic. I mean, everyone knew when she was coming. They would stop. There's never traffic. They would stop and wait for her to cross the street. So she wasn't learning. But so this Freedom Link is amazing. If anyone lives in the area, I would highly recommend it. She has changed once again. I mean, she went to Bell to practice her Freedom Link skills. She had lived in the city for 5 days in my sister's condo. She took Uber to Bell.
Wow.
Yes. Then she Ubered back home, and then she called me. She didn't call me at all, actually. I called her Thursday. She forgot about her mother. It was Monday through Thursday, so Thursday night I called her, and I said, you know, you haven't told me what time to pick you up Friday, because we were going out of town. And she said, I've just been so busy. You know, I have to go to the grocery store and get my groceries. And I'm like, how? How in Chicago? She's like, well, you go in and you go to the counter and tell them you need a shopping assistant. And then she said, oh, and I went to Nordstrom and I bought a birthday present for someone. And I said, okay. She said, I got a personal shopper at Nordstrom. And then she said, and by the way, Uber has cheaper Uber. She said they have group Uber, which I'd never heard of. So I think this Freedom Link is completely, you know, the thing to do in Chicago. It's the best. And then the most recent thing, she was accepted to the University of Iowa. So we will need to, yeah, do a lot more travel skills with her before she leaves. Yeah.
Our sighted kids to Freedom Link.
I know, right?
It's only a 3-hour trip for me. I wish we'd had it.
Right. She's not afraid of the train, the metro. She just has
she
her.
Great when she was
she does her phone.
Yeah.
She was so happy. So I knew she had to be in a bigger city for school then. I was going to send her to a small university, small school. And after that week, she said, Mom, I can't be in a small town anymore. I really like the transportation.
Yeah.
It's just liberating.
Yeah.
She said, I can go anywhere I want. And she was just happy. Just much different. Yeah.
I'll have my grandson look her up.
Yeah. If you guys have any questions, obviously I made so many mistakes raising her.
No,
I can tell you right now.
No, you didn't.
Oh, I lost my temper. I was annoyed at
times.
Doesn't
everybody lose their temper with their kids?
Exactly. I'm still adjusting daily. You know, she's blind. And there are many days that I forget that she's blind, and I get frustrated because I forget she's 18, and I completely, some days, why aren't you matching? Like, no. And I'm like, oh, Emma, that shirt doesn't go. But even her friends...
But this happens.
Right. Her friends and teachers.
I try to keep my son and my girlfriend, both who have a visual condition, as if they don't have one. And I sometimes totally forget. We were out camping in the woods. It was starting to get dark. I was fine, but it was an hour before sunset. So with all those trees, she couldn't see a thing and nearly tripped over a root. I felt so bad years later when I finally realized it a half hour later. I realized, oh my gosh, I had overestimated her ability. So it's okay. We make these mistakes as part of being human. And we learn from them. And all we can do is educate and teach people.
Anybody have any questions or comments?
When did your daughter go to Freedom Line?
She has been, is this her third year?
This is her second year.
Her second year.
Yeah. So they're older kids. It's,
yeah, they're middle school and high school.
Okay.
In fact, this year and last year, we didn't have any middle schoolers because we had really such a cohesive group of high school kids. We're going to talk about it a little bit more in the afternoon sessions, so you'll get to hear from some of the kids.
Because we have the same problem. We live in a very small town. Actually, my husband works in Morris. We're about an hour north of Morris. But when we went to Bell, Riker would keep telling me to listen for the surge. Our town has 200 people. There's no surge.
It's never going to come.
There's never going to be a surge.
Yes.
And he'll joke about it. He's like, Mommy, I'm listening for the surge. And then we'll have one car go by, and he's like, well, there it was. So, you know, he's only 7 now, so we have a long time. But I'm afraid with him growing up in such a small town.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we don't have sidewalks in most of our town, so we walk on the street because that's all you have. That's
we actually have a girl in Freedom Link who just started this year who's from a town. Sounds very much like yours. She said there's 300 people in her town. There's no sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
It's out towards Rockford. And her mom brought her, she said it was an hour and a half driving, and then they took a train for an hour to get into the city to be in the program.
Yeah, that's what
so.
We have to
I mean,
do.
That's dedication.
Good for her mom.
Yeah. You know, I
recommend.
Just give her
a big hug having fun here.
For doing it.
It's not only travel.
He loves it. Yeah. So
I don't think it's only travel skills. I think talking to the adults and, you know, hearing real life stories about how you could live as a blind person. Happy, successful, doing things you enjoy doing, eating the foods you like, cooking the foods you like. They talk. And she comes home and tells me all the things that she can do, or she starts doing them herself. They went to the theater, and they met, well, I was there too, but it was interesting
that
the actors talked in their normal voice, and then they talked in their acting voice. Mm-hmm. So you could see, you know what, this actor doesn't really talk like that. It was neat. And you could walk up on the stage and touch the props and wear, like, the costumes. And then they had this bed. Now they, when we watched the play, they knew that there was a bed there. And with all these curtains and the costumes were beautiful and long dresses.
It was a Christmas carol.
Now that we wouldn't be able to do. How would we be able to do that, you know, unless we found someone that would do it for us.
Yeah, that program.
A lot of theaters now are starting to have touch tours and audio description where you get a little headset and there's somebody up in a booth describing everything that the actors are doing in between the lines. So there's a lot more awareness about access in theaters than there was a few years ago. It's really an exciting trend.
Really. I do some paid orchestra stuff, so I have access. My poor kids have to sit through rehearsals. But they also have the access to bring them all on the stage and touch everything.
Yeah, so they get to really see how it works.
Yeah, but it's thinking ahead, because I wouldn't have really thought of that before somebody mentioned it. Oh, yeah, my son doesn't know what's going on stage.
Uh-huh.
He knows all the songs.
Right.
Every orchestration.
He watches TV, but doesn't see what's going on.
So audio is
and
free,
you don't know,
you
why
know,
they're laughing.
Right.
Yeah, and so you don't have to sit there and talk to them through the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's marvelous.
And most of the theater people I know, directors included, they're happy to
accommodate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the actors haven't seen it before, so they have questions.
Yeah. Is there kids with partial sight that go to Freedom Link?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Sebastian is
Jonathan. I'm going to go ahead and take over for a second. My name is Jonathan. Sebastian is my son. He's probably taking a nap because he was up late last night. But I'm letting him try to be more independent because I keep looking at reinforcement. And I'm going to try to be more independent. Let him be more independent anyway. But it's good to hear it from people with parents of blind, parents who are blind. It's all good. He went with them to this performance. And the interesting thing is that I wanted to mention to you is that both Sebastian and his mother have the same visual condition, congenital nystagmus, you know, low vision, depth perception is really bad after about 3 or 4 so feet. But I learned that Sebastian really loves audio description. His mom can't stand it.
Well, there are individual differences, just like everything else.
So Sebastian actually gave some critical feedback to the gentleman doing the actual, doing the audio description, because I guess the audio description during that program was a little bit not to his liking. One thing that you can learn, though, as parents, is that there are a lot of programs now on television that have a descriptive video service or an audio track. They have all different acronyms for
it. Movie theaters have it, too.
Movie theaters have them, too. But the nice thing about that I want to tell people about is that if you watch the Olympics this year on NBC in the evenings, that little 5 or 6 hour segment in the evenings actually had live descriptive video.
Oh, wow.
Wasn't that before the Olympics? For me, I didn't have to say as much. I'm an act. When I'm at events like this, when I'm at around people who have visual impairments, I turn on my descriptive audio track myself. It was great having the person on screen, you know, reading the stuff, covering the things, mentioning the things that maybe I wouldn't notice or I wouldn't think to mention. And these people were great. They knew when the people would pause. They knew when to talk over the talent that was doing most of it. And it's really great. Simpsons, by the way, also had, if you like that show.
Also,
The Simpsons has a descriptive audio track. And a lot of the stuff I think on USA Network is amazing.
Disney has Sophia the First.
Yeah. If you look on, I think the NFB site might have a page on that somewhere about which one.
How do you turn it on?
If you go under assistive, it's either Spanish or you could do the
audio description. It's the second audio program. If you're in the land of Comcast, their new box that we picked up, I guess last summer, they've had it around for a few years. It's not buried in the menu anymore. It's just you can do it off the main screen, which is great because if you reach a TV channel that's silent, because they don't have a descriptive audio track, no more. Oh, quick, I can turn it back on really quickly.
Well, we read an article stating that by law, by like so many years, that they were supposed to put this all in place.
I believe that's correct.
They're supposed to become more and more accessible.
I think it'll eventually become as common or almost as common as closed captioning is now. Closed captioning now is done everywhere. Closed captioning is done live. Some smaller markets don't do it as well. I know that's when I turn it on, but usually big markets, they seem to cover that. And you hear what they're saying to the best of the ability.
And if anyone watched Rocky Horror Picture Show, that was all done in audio.
Yeah, it was.
And Hairspray is supposed to be done the same way. So
more theaters are doing it too. Getting back to the original conversation, I think Chicago Shakespeare Company, their theaters are doing...
Most of the theaters in Chicago have at least one audio-described performance.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's some in the summer and some of the various...
I called for Hamilton, and they will do all of their shows audio if you request it.
If you can get tickets, right?
I called because it was for Emma's birthday, and I didn't see anything audio. And then I called a week later after we had already been to Hamilton and paid ridiculous amount of money for the tickets. So I called and I asked. I said, "Well, you didn't have these audio shows before, and I already took my daughter." I was kind of mad. I just said, I would have taken her to the audio descriptive show because she had so many questions. Why are they saying that? Why are they giggling? You know, because she loves Hamilton.
Yeah.
And the woman said, "Oh, you request the audio when you buy your tickets. And what date are you looking for? I might have some." And I said, "Well, I can go on this date." And she said, "We have 4 tickets. And you can only buy 6 at per family." She gave them to me at cost.
Wow.
Nice.
And I don't know if it was because I asked about the audio and I was so upset about it. And I don't know if it's just for Hamilton. I don't know, Debbie, is that?
I've never heard of that.
There were four shows that had audio.
We had an experience watching a show.
Les Mis.
We took Andrea. We took the schedule that has an audio description with it. And they also charged us like the base price. I think they have some tickets.
Nominal fee.
Sometimes they have
an
access.
Hamilton doesn't
have
a special price for any of their shows.
Yeah, but the price we paid, it was good seats, but it was like the basic price.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think they have some seats offered for, you know, handicapped.
Were you in the
wheelchair? Yeah, right. With a companion, so it's two tickets for a low price.
Were you so in the handicap seats, like by the wheelchair?
Yeah.
Those are. But I wanted four, because my other two children, I'm going to torture them and take them. Whether they like it or not, it's such a good show. But then she said, you can only have one companion.
Yeah.
She did say that.
Yeah, the handicap seats.
Yeah.
So if you want to get audio in a theater, because I took Aaron to see a movie, and even though he's got a lot of vision, you know, he asks me tons of questions. Mm-hmm. I miss so much because
so do I.
Why did
you
say that? What are they doing? Yeah. You know, it just flashes by too quickly, I think, to process what he's seeing.
Yeah.
And I called up the theater and I said, I want to bring him to this Secret Life of Pets. Is there audio available? And they said, no. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but you have blind people who want to go to movies. I said, you might want to think about getting it. And they go, oh, okay. I know, they just blew me off. So what is there something you can say? Is there some law you can cite? Is there something you can say?
I think there is now, isn't
there?
Yes,
for the movie theater?
For a movie theater. Where they
I don't
can't
know
just
if it's...
I hear your competition is at this place.
Yeah.
Right.
The AMC theaters apparently have got the audio in most of their theaters.
AMC,
that's one of the big chains.
It's the chain.
Chicago.
AMC, you have Lowe's.
Yeah.
Cineplex.
They own every theater.
Like a chain, like Target or whatever.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There's a website you can look up. I think it's called Movies for the Blind, and it lists, you can put in your zip code and it will list
where they've got descriptive
theaters. So there's nothing you can say to a theater that doesn't have it.
I really think we'd like to get it.
And follow up.
And write a letter.
I would definitely.
Put it in writing.
I would say follow up once or twice with it. Because like you said, you say it once, they blow it off, they're like, okay.
But try to get to a higher rate.
Yeah, do it again.
Have it yet?
Right.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Or do I have to go to the other theater downtown?
Well, and sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. I'll put it that way.
I myself am not a particular fan of audio description all the time, although sometimes I like it. But I think it would probably make as much difference if you let them know that the competition has it, and we'll go there if you don't get it.
You said it was called Movies for the Blind? You can
I believe
that
that's the name of the website,
All right, I'll take a look.
Movies for the Blind. But or just Google it, and you'll...
Fish, C-A-P-P-I-S-H.
Oh, that's another one.
Action Fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, they list out all the movie theaters that has audio described the movies.
Okay. That includes deaf, deaf captioning and audio description for the blind.
Maybe it's Disney specific. There was an app, I think I read about it on Newsline, or what is that that we get? That does it, like they told us what the app was, and when the movie starts, you
Disney
go
does
on
it.
The
Disney
on the
does
app
it.
Button.
Yeah, Disney has it where you have an app on your phone, and whenever the movie starts, you play it, and it syncs automatically, and then you just listen with your headphones.
Okay. Does it have to be on a phone?
Well, I mean,
Android or Apple.
It has to be like one.
It's got
to
have some sort of signal. I would
Wi-Fi or cellular.
Yeah.
Would this be a theater itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Katie just did it in Atlanta.
I swear, I read about it.
Wow.
That is probably not only Disney that offers it.
I think this one was a Disney.
Well, Disney right now is trying to be the head runner of this whole being audio, described kind of thing, because of that law. Like I was saying, that article that we read, it's supposed to be coming out, but Disney, always wants to be like
it's
the head guy.
Yeah.
So like ABC and like all the like Freeform and all them that Disney owns. Like,
what about ESPN? Will they do any describe sports? Because that would be
I haven't heard anything about ESPN. I mean, like, we are huge Olympian watchers. So, yes, we watched it in descriptive as much as we could, too. So, I mean, we try it. Katie loves audio descriptive because then she doesn't like to ask what happened, because she feels like she'll in her mind, like, I think she tries to put it together, and so she doesn't all the time like to ask me. So it's like one of her new favorite things And she's like, I know you hate it, but can we watch it in audio describe? And I'm like, I don't hate it. I'm getting used to it now. You know what I mean? Because, like, whenever we used to get the movies through the mail, like, through, like, you
the
know.
Netflix.
Yeah. Well, you know how you get the books through the mail? Well, we used to get the audio describe movies. Well, they used to drive me insane. I mean, like, watching, like, 101 Dalmatians during the whole thing, listening to them going, now they're all 101 Dalmatians, you know, running down the street in the snow, and they're paw prints, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I know, okay, you know, and it was just so much audio, you know what I mean, and so now I'm just like, I'm embracing it, I'm okay with it now, you know, Katie loves it, and, you know, and that's why I'm, like, trying really hard to, like, whenever it does annoy me, I'm, like, in my own zone going, okay, I'm all right. This is okay. I can do this because I love my daughter, and this is good for her. You know?
Noise canceling headphones and just to watch it. And she needs the audio design.
You learn a lot of patience. That's a nice thing about the theater. I mean, because, you know, it's a headset, and nobody else has to hear it but you.
We do so much for our kids, you know, and it's just like, this is just that one other thing, and you're just like, I can do this. I can. I'm good.
Riker has a touch of OCD. And when I used to take him to the post office with me for work, he would have to put all of the boxes on A before we left, all the ones he could reach. So I'd have to stand there and wait for him to turn the letter, turn them all to A's. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you really need to hurry. I've always been the type of person like, let's go, let's go, let's go. You know, I'm herding four children out the door. Right. I was like,
next,
I need to go. I've learned so much patience from that child. Because if you don't, it's going to be
it bothers him so much.
Chaos. Yeah. We have I'd rather just let him go.
We have a little girl who, we have strings that kind of help us tie our, I work in the school district, and we have these strings that tie our little cabinets up. And for some reason, if those strings are not just a certain way, she refuses to leave. And if you don't let her, she'll have a meltdown.
Yep.
And it's just like, you just go, hurry up, go ahead. And then I'm like, thank you so much for doing that for me. I mean, like, what else are you going to do? You know?
When Riker was little, he had a thing with doors being open. He couldn't handle doors open. They said, they told me it was because past a certain point his vision was so bad that it made him scared. So he liked doors shut. So it didn't matter where we were, every door had to be shut. And I had to wait for him to shut all the doors. And we could be in a hotel, in the hospital, in anywhere. He'd go around and shut all the doors.
Oh, great.
And then people are looking at him like, why is he shutting the door? I'm like, just let him, please, just let him go. And
then he might have got
Yeah,
what would
you like to say, Andrew?
Back to the, about the audio description.
Yeah.
I memorized, like, most of the Planes movie, but I memorized parts of the audio description, too.
Oh. How many times have you watched it?
Let's see.
Okay, too much.
Probably can't.
I had a count, but then I forgot.
Well, I think that's why you memorized it all.
I have a question for the parents in general. Parents that have kids that are partially sighted, you talked about the grieving process when you have a child with a disability. You go through the grieving process. In our case, it was different because Riker has been tested for everything under the sun, and it always came back with, oh, yeah, we see this, we see this. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Yep, there's definitely problems. I don't know what it is. And we just got the retinal dystrophy diagnosis in June, and he's been going to an ophthalmologist since he was 1 year old. So, I mean, it took 7 years to get this diagnosis.
Definitive diagnosis.
Yeah. So for me, and people are always like, what are you going to do when he loses his vision? I'm like, I don't feel like I'm grieving because it's like, oh, thank God.
We finally have an answer.
It's a relief, yeah.
And he's partially sighted, and they said, the retinal specialist said that it will degenerate, so he will lose his sight. And everybody's like, oh, how are you going to handle that? I'm like, he is a smart kid. Anybody that meets Riker knows he is going to be just fine. There is no reason for me to grieve him losing his vision.
With Sebastian, I've only known him since he was about maybe 3 or 5 years old. Obviously, his mom, who's working this weekend because she's a lecturer and has a lot of work to do all the time during these college semesters. But for me, it was just one of those things that kind of was part of the package, you know, part of that is his mom had a situation, as he has a situation, so I've never really had a chance I think it varies by person. For me, you know, I knew about Sebastian's you know, vision, but I liked it better when I could put a name on some of the social or behavioral stuff that, you know, he kind of has trouble with. Yeah. That helped me understand it. It didn't make it any easier, and you still have to deal with challenge in big cities, San Francisco,
yeah,
Chicago. But having that kind of helps. So, I mean, every person's different, really. Every parent's going to be different. And
yeah.
All I can say is that the fact that you teach and you treat like any other kid is, I think, a really big plus, because that's what I do. And whenever Sebastian has ever tried to play it, and he doesn't do it this often, the four blind kid card. everyone, as a child, like that, he was like, no, you've had this problem. Your mom had this problem. Your grandmother had this problem. Some other aunts and uncles have. No. Just shut that down pretty quick. So everything's different, but I mean, it's useful to know what it is. I'm sorry to hear that it took you so long. Did you?
He is. Yeah. And he's had moments where he's like, oh, I'm going to have to live with someone forever, and I'm not going to be able to drive, and I'm not going to be able to do anything. But the Bell Academy...
Cars. We're waiting for those Google cars.
The Bell Academy helped a lot with that, because he saw people that were vision impaired that had awesome lives, and he was okay with it then.
And that's, I think, a big plus. I think having, especially going to the Freedom League, put him in touch with people that happen to be...
independent already, yeah.
Yeah.
Coming to the National Federation of the Blind, sending Christopher to the Bell Camp has been leaps and bounds for our grieving process, I guess, if you will, to understand that, yes, he could possibly be an independent, you know, self-serving, you know, person of the general public. Now, granted, he's got some autistic tendencies, he's got sensory issues, he's got food aversions, you know, he's got all these other issues that may go away, that may be more accentuated later, but whatever. If he ends up living with us for the rest of his life, he ends up living with us for the rest of his life. None the wiser.
There are sighted adults that live with their parents.
Well, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Kids who are supposedly not disabled at all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And as far as the grieving.
Until I just started early, you're probably not going to be able to drive. You know, I just.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I think it hits boys harder than girls.
Yeah.
Or something.
Because boys feel like they have to be able to drive in order to go out with a girl.
My 16-year-old was told in June also that he has retinal dystrophy, and they're looking at RP as a diagnosis, and he was livid. Yeah. Uh-huh. He was so angry.
That's okay.
Like it was their fault.
And that's a process that
worked. Yeah.
Yes. He says, I'm not going to be able to be an engineer. I'm not going to be able to do music. I'm like, yes, you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
You can do engineering by touch.
That's right.
He plays all his instruments by ear anyway.
Yeah.
So
Right. The difference, it takes time. One of the hidden disabilities that I have is I have anxiety. I take pills to help it. It helps out a lot. I need about an extra 10% time on tests. They give me about an extra 50% when I was at college. Mm-hmm. My B-plus went up to like an A. I stressed out a lot less. Part of that, I used to never say the word anxiety. I'd say I was high spun. I'd say I was worked up. I'd say I was kind of high energy at times. Right now, I'm kind of living on caffeine, so you probably and this alcohol really projects. You learn to accept it, and your 16-year-old, I'm sure it's a tough time. There's a whole lot of crap going on. Sorry if it's strong language there.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes with that. It took me a few years to really accept that. And it took a few years for a less talented sort of social counselor kind of person during couples counseling to realize, oh my God, you have anxiety. I don't know why it took for so many months. But once we realized that, then we could kind of work with that. And I worked on it for years, and life is pretty cool and medication.
My son has Asperger's too, the oldest. So he has his life planned. Like everything is planned.
Yeah.
So you
so
throw a monkey wrench in there, and he was a mess. But now
testosterone helps that too, right?
Well,
now he's in denial. He's just like, Riker's vision is worse than mine, so I'm never going to lose my vision. I'm like, you just think
it's
that
a process.
Now.
Yeah,
it's a process. You have time to deal with it as
he
it comes,
will.
Too.
Yeah.
Just as you've learned to deal with your son as it comes. You know, Christopher was born, we didn't know he was blind until about 3 months, and when we found out after going through to a specialist to find out he's never going to see anything, it was detrimental to me. I'm a car guy. I like to go to car shows. I like to race my car. He's not going to be able to drive. He's not going to be able to see the cars, but we go to car shows, and I've found people that allow him to touch their prized possession and feel the interior and feel the exterior and everything else like that. So, you know, I mean, like she was saying, the grieving process that you maybe not have seen, not maybe you haven't noticed yourself going through the grieving process, but just understanding that people can lead a fine life by themselves, independent. A lot of them become lawyers, you know, attorneys and stuff like that. So
it's funny, we're same household. I was the exact opposite on the grieving process. I had gave myself, I don't know, what, five minutes at the hospital to cry?
Right.
Like, they told me, they were like, oh, but he's got to have more tests tomorrow. I'm like, well, you go and see him. I need to get on the phone and call the insurance company, whatever.
Right, she just ran into the next step.
Yeah. You know, so.
went in there,
had, like, 2 minutes of crying until the nurse walked in. She's like, are you okay? I'm like, oh, yep, fine, that's it. That's all I got, because life moves on.
Yeah.
Right.
Some
of us are slower.
And you know, and the other thing is he went to they shipped him out of Naperville schools to a blind school. The blind school is Salt Creek. And
it's great for some kids.
Yeah, it's great for some kids. Now, their basis for teaching blind children is because they were blind, and that is their ailment. Christopher has non-24. He's got sensory issues. He's got slight autism, autistic tendencies. He's got all the other things. They would just wrap gymnastics mat around him when he got into an irate mode, where because of their rules they can't restrain him from, you know, scratching or doing anything else.
Yeah.
And then call me and I'd have to come pick him up from school. He got transferred out of that school into the Naperville school district, where the lady that ran the program has dealt with paraplegic, you know, mental retardation, you know, all these other things. And it was leaps and bounds in like a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was leaps and bounds in a month that he got transferred to the Naperville school. And I was like,
that's when you really got to see his potential.
Yeah. And then the Bell program accentuated it as well. So, you know, it's been great to, you know, see all of the people that are, you know,
all the stages everybody's in.
Oh yeah. And the stages that parents go through. You claim is to what grievance, you know, I didn't go through this, but maybe you're not seeing what it is that you did go through, and it's just a natural, you know, you're going with the flow like the way that she's doing it, you know. So,
and I love to have questions and answers because it's fun to share.
I like to network with people for sure, because I don't have all the answers. I don't know what's going on.
Especially living in a small town.
Yeah, and
too,
there
so.
Are no vision impaired children in our town, and he is the only one that's been in the school for as long as they've had that.
So he's the basis for the teacher's learning.
Which is
why
they're giving him nothing, because they don't know.
It's tough.
Yeah, so.
I can imagine that.
Well, we got promised things that never came around, so.
Oh, they just tell me he's fine.
You need to come in and work.
He'll
get in there and work for his IEP.
Yeah, it's just nice to be able to bounce ideas and figure things out.
Yeah.
So here's a question with acceptance and grieving. My people who are Bell people already know what's going on with Aaron, but I think I'm still sitting in a grieving process because Aaron is not total. But he's not totally sighted. And so I spend so many things going back and forth. I literally just came out of a pre-IEP meeting yesterday morning where they told me, oh no, Aaron sees fine outside. Oh yeah, he doesn't need technology. Oh yeah, he doesn't need his cane. Oh yeah, you're the one causing him to say that he can't do things.
Oh,
you
no,
come in with that
gosh.
Cane
no.
And all of a sudden Aaron says, I can't do it anymore.
I've heard that too.
Okay, so yesterday morning, I was to the point where I was like, you know what? This little shit, I'm just going to back off. I mean, I was that mad about it. And I thought, I'm going to tear into him when I find him. You're like, what the heck are you telling these people? You know, and then you come home and yell at me and tell me, I can't do it. And then you're telling them, oh, I don't need that, I'm fine. I was like, oh, you little sprat, I'm going to take care of you. So that's the way it was yesterday morning. I didn't light into him. He came home. I said, how was your day? You're mad at me. No, I'm mad at
you.
He says, you're not talking the right way. And I said, I'm not mad. Did something go badly today? No, nothing went bad. Let's get ready. So I had to literally lift up my voice and go, let's get ready to go. We're going to go see our friends. It's going to be a great time, right? Right. And inside I'm thinking, I'm going to find out what's wrong with you. You are making me nuts. You realize the fight I'm doing. So, you know, so I go from this, I'm going to get him back, and he's manipulating me, to coming here and watching him just be the exact opposite. And I'm sitting here going, wow, what is wrong? What is going on here? You know, and it's a daily thing. You go from this high of, yes, I got it figured out. Yes, he needs a cane. Yes, he needs Braille. Yes, he's partially sighted, but I don't care. here. I'm gonna fight for him. He is taking me for a ride, and I'm sick of being on the train with him.
You know what? Both things might be true.
Yeah,
because kids
exactly.
will
so
play
I,
their advantage. All kids
can
will
try to laugh it off, which is just my personality. But on the other hand, it's like I'm always going to bed going, Lord, what are you doing to me?
Yeah.
Am I the one that's crazy? Truly, if I'm crazy, somebody please tell me. So would you like to go check into the mental institution? Or is Aaron crazy? One of us is crazy because
no,
I can't get any commonality between what I hear from NFB and the experts that I have. Lord, I've got so many experts that tell me, yes, this child needs help. I said, what about his mother? But then he'll go to school and say, oh, no, I don't need that. I don't need that. And,
sure. He doesn't want to be different.
The last time I went to an IEP, he told them he loved to read. And I said, what? I said, do you like to read? And he goes, no, I hate it. And I go, why did you tell me you like to read?
Because that's what teachers want to hear, and he's in the mode
Thank you all for saying that, because the school beats me down every single time I go talk to them.
And I'm not a parent, never have been, never will be, but may I make a remark on this subject?
Go ahead. Please do. Please do.
Hold on to your craziness.
No, I don't want to hold on to craziness.
Hold on to your craziness, because when the subject needs it, and maybe add a little bit of diplomacy for good measure, but when the time is right, you'll be able to tell somebody to go to hell and make them feel good that they're going.
Well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
No.
Share, that's the way I was.
Share two things. I think everybody goes into these IEPs and we're like, I'm a strong parent, I'm going to go in there, and then they beat you down.
Yes, they do.
And sometimes, take
an advocate with you.
I was going to say,
oh,
yes.
Next one. Okay.
And it does an advocate
get somebody
that knows
to go with you.
Vision impairment.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I had an advocate that sat there and did nothing, and then I never heard from her again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, NFB has advocates that will go with you.
Yeah.
We have a cousin who is Christopher's favorite person in the world.
Yes.
She grew up with a mentally disabled brother. She's taught in autistic school. She's actually met some of the
higher ups,
the staff members coming to do IEPs at her school. She's always willing to come or talk to me beforehand or afterwards, just to have somebody else there next to you that you know.
So they can't win by intimidation.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
They overwhelm you.
Okay.
Yes.
You go to parent teacher conferences for my 3 sighted kids, and it's you and the teacher, or you and your wife, you and your spouse, and the teacher. When you look at these IEPs, it's 13 teachers, or you know,
professional.
That's exactly what's intimidating about the process.
Yeah.
And I know she likes me to go to him with her.
Not that I let him speak.
You're very intimidating.
But luckily for us in the Naperville schools, we had Tracy Wilkes, who just got that award because she was like an NFB advocate next to us in the school with him, running the program, making sure he had every single thing that he needed out of the school system, and if it wasn't available for him, she found out who to talk to get it available.
In fact, today, she's not his teacher anymore. He's in junior high now.
She's like,
when we bumped into her and visiting Christopher, she gave me names because she's like, how is it going? And I'm like, oh, well, you know, Morgan's great. That's his new TBI, but she doesn't have the support from the school. And she's like,
right.
Let me give you some names.
The assistant principal seems a little demeaning and maybe male chauvinistic towards, and I haven't gotten to see this yet because I haven't gotten to go to this new school for any of the meetings with her, but I will make certain to go to the next one because she's a little more intimidated by them because
I'm polite.
And she stays polite about it. And I'll, you know.
So you get behind a computer and an email.
Right.
When you're in the IEP, you need to make sure that your voice is heard.
So we were heard at our IEP.
It's the recourse that comes after.
It's making it happen.
Yeah.
And I would say, secondly, something, you know, you said, well, you know, you're fighting for all these things, and then your son's like, well, I don't need these things. I would compare it to learning a second language or learning how to use a computer when you don't do data entry for a job or learning music. Why not? That's a skill that you can have.
to do so many things in the future. You know, eventually, he's going to need his mobility skills and his braille skills and whatever. He doesn't see
granted that right now, how old is he?
He's 10.
Okay, so granted right now, he's at the point where he wants to please his teachers, he wants to please
his
friends,
yeah,
and yet
yeah.
go home and please mom and, you know, whatever as well. So mm-hmm. you got a clash there of him saying to the teachers, I don't really need this because
right. I
can get by.
Exactly.
Blah, blah. But you yeah. know, he does need this.
He will
so,
need
and
it.
And he will need it
right.
eventually. So him learning them at this young of an age is going to make it much easier for him when he either
right.
does lose his vision or whatever.
Yeah,
tools
in the
toolbox.
It's
yeah.
that it's that longevity thing that they don't like because they keep saying, "Well, we'll reassess if something happens."
Because
like,
by then it'll be
it,
a whole new
not...
team and they won't be involved in it anymore.
Well,
yeah.
Do you have like a list of stuff? Do you rehearse things before you go to IEPs?
Oh yes, I have. I talked to people at National Convention,
okay,
and Carlton and Cook Walker. She took
yeah.
one of
yeah.
the IEP
yeah.
and she
go.
Said, "This is a disaster. You don't have this or this or this. You have nothing about this or this. This thing is way too short. You go home." It was the first thing she said. You go home and you make a list of every single concern. And a couple options. She says, that way, whichever one they pick, you win.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, hey,
yeah.
I win.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I can win.
The school allows the IEP pretty well. They have it down to a good science. And I think it's having a visual cluster there. I think that's from having a few autistic kids higher the autistic spectrum,
okay.
you know, there, and probably
yeah.
some minor kids on the minor spectrum, too. And still, we almost always, especially with the, you know, take more than an hour, you know, and part of this is just depending on the time you and you know your spouse or a partner, if you have one, have is the follow-up. It's a pain in the ass, but it works.
Yeah.
And half the time when you know, I mean, sometimes it's just lack of knowledge. For example, you know, Sebastian gets extra time on a standardized test because of his visual impairment.
Right.
His bus got there late, so he didn't get a chance to have breakfast. But he's now so well behaved that he was too polite to ask for a snack during it.
Yeah,
and no one thought to ask him. They're like, don't worry, in the spring we'll make sure that we do it. So sometimes it's training, sometimes it's just finding the
right
fit, as you said. From
yeah.
exactly.
You not being subject to it,
yeah.
the school system that you're trying to help understand what you're going through, not being subject to it before, they're like, yeah, we'll push it up next time, whatever.
To
no, it's, yeah, you gotta.
I need to go back into the general sessions.
Oh,
the original idea was for you guys to go, you know, we would stop at 2 o'clock, and this is such a great discussion that I hate to interrupt it. I don't know that they're going to kick you out of this room anytime soon. If you all want to stay here and
just
keep going and just, you know, I just think this is so important for you guys to have a chance to talk to each other and make connections and be able to network. But if you want to come back and learn to dance,
we can go see her dance in a little bit.
We can do that too.
Well, I just wanted to tell you, my daughter was getting ready to go where she could. By law, to graduate in Illinois, you have to take driver's ed. My daughter can't see, so I went in with court documentation from Chicago area where they stated that it was waived. I went in with this court documentation in my hand and said, she will not take driver's ed. It needs to be waived. Her driver's ed is her cane training.
Yeah.
And that's what, and I said, I have proof.
For driver's ed.
I have
Put
proof
her in. Yeah.
that Chicago, it was waived. I said, and if you dare put her in it, she will benefit from it and she will drive a car. That's on you.
That's a good one.
Put her behind the wheel.
You know, I'm like,
and then you guys
she's not going to sit there and take the whole class, and she's not going to, you know, not get the benefit of it. And then the other thing was is that I had a vision teacher in her
That's
high school
terrible.
Year that sit there and told me over and over again and told Katie that she did not need Braille.
Yeah.
Now, Katie has very, she's low vision, she's legally blind, she has no peripheral, no side vision, she only has one eye, and there's like a little bitty pinhole that this little girl's seeing out of, and they wanted me to not have her have Braille, and I said no, because whenever she goes into college, I know for a fact the material's going to be smaller, and there's going to be so much more that I want her to have it. Along with that, she has a higher risk of her vision being lost and Her dad is legally blind, and it's a form of communication for her. I don't care. She's learning Braille. Mm-hmm. Well, this vision teacher thought that she was so much better than what I was. So after finding out that she was not teaching her Braille, she was teaching her Japanese Braille.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's
oh
my. For fun.
For fun.
Yep.
And then wow. She decided that she was, because her husband had the same eye condition that my daughter has, and he never has to use it. Therefore, she'll never have to use it. After finding out all this, I called up the IEP representative for the school, and I said, we need to have a talk. And I went in there, and I presented to her all the things that had been going on, and I had her fired from two schools.
Wow.
Good job.
That's
good.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I mean, yeah. You have to be the advocate. I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to be like, this is what it is. This is why it is. And then if you go in there with all this knowledge and, like, backup, they can't,
yeah,
I mean.
They don't like it.
I think the hard thing is finding out what's going on at school, because my son can't tell me. He doesn't
yeah.
come home and tell me what's going on at school.
Right. They're you know, they devised the Common Core stuff with the PARCC test, and we said, no, he shouldn't be on the same level. He's, you know, he's subpar to what his, you know,
peers
are. So putting him on a you know,
testing him
in the system, it's also, you know, showing that it's also diminishing the teachers, because he's got they have a student that has scored so low. So it's diminishing on the teachers', you know, backgrounds as well, because they've got a student that has such a low score that I'm really crazy against.
It's not accessible to him
yeah.
at all.
And it's not accessible. You want to make it accessible and make the test accessible and everything else. And on his level, for like I said, he's subpar compared to his peers. You want to put it all like that, and then do whatever it would have to be, some type of, you know, algorithm to put his score to be level. But it's not like that. That's why this whole Common Core thing over the nation. That's why the people in super smart areas, I want to say, you know, Maryland or whatever, up there in the small states, right off the bat, they opted out of the Common Core stuff because they knew that their students' scores, their teachers were a little higher up, and they were always up on the high level, that they're going to be brought down because they're not going to, you know, the advanced teachings that they're doing currently are going to be brought down to a level that the whole other, you know, I mean, the smaller areas and stuff like that, that
well,
they're not.
I live in a very small school district.
Okay.
Katie is the first visually impaired student
to go
in over 20 years.
See, so you're teaching them.
So
yeah.
I just went in there, and we used to live in Atlanta, Georgia, and we had the Center for the Visually Impaired there, and she's been there ever since she was family. But it was a matter of fact of me going. I knew if I was going to go in there, I needed to show them that I knew what I was talking about.
Hello, right.
And that was the only way they were going to respect me, because they didn't know really what they were doing. So
show them what they're dealing with. Right?
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I mean,
exactly.
You know,
the only way they started teaching Patrick Braille at school was when he started learning it outside. I had to take him in the summer and independent living, and then
But anyway, that would be my suggestion, because that's what I found. Like, you know, it seemed like when I went in and I said, "This is what." Like, especially for the driver's ed, you know, this has already been abolished up in Chicago due to this, and, you know, the court order had already gone through. What were they going to say? No?
Right.
I mean, like, really, they looked at me like, yeah, we don't have a problem. Sure. Okay. We just got to get it approved by the superintendent, but I'm sure it'll be okay. I mean, they can't argue with
Patrick
you.
Had to take first aid instead of the driver's ed.
Well, and that's... Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, actually.
Another special skill, right.
But, I mean, like, I sat through and I said, listen, her mobility is equal to her driving a car, you know? I said, but that doesn't count for anything. Her vision doesn't count for anything. So, you know, why can't that just be it? So, I mean, if you go in there logically and kind of think about it and kind of pre-think, like that.
And think again.
You know, yeah, really, you know, kind of sit there and try to find the loophole that they might have.
Yeah.
I mean, guaranteed, you're not going to be able to get everything that you need, You know what I mean? Like, you're not entitled to, like, you know, the gold slate and stylist and, you know what I mean? You know, you're not entitled to all that. But, you know, at least give you, like, you know, some cardboard and an ink pen. You know what I mean? You know? I mean, you are entitled to some things. It's just, you know, just don't be one of those parents that go in and go, no, it has to be plated in gold because my son is the best. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, you have to go in there logically and, you know that you have your rights.
Yeah.
You know?
We just had an assistive technology eval done that they were supposed to do at the beginning of the year, and they waited until October.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
And...
Now,
there was no technology involved. There was no tech. They didn't assess the technology.
Oh, Katie used to tell her vision teacher the new technology that was out there because she didn't know it.
No. How did you get? Did you have O&M for Katie through the school?
Yes.
How did you get O&M when she can function well? They're telling me that Riker doesn't need O&M.
No. Katie has no lower field vision. She has no peripheral field vision.
Yeah.
Her visual field is up in the top corner.
Riker's is central. He has no peripheral and no depth perception.
Right there.
And
right there
central,
alone.
His central is 2100.
Right there alone is what I would be. I would be like...
He needs it. Talk to Debbie Stein.
Texas.
She'll have someone from the NFB go with you to your IEP and shoot them down and
sometimes,
make sure that they give you what you need at all costs.
There's a test, a standard test maybe, you know what, is it the Texas one that
I think so.
Evaluates a better, at least you would have something to...
And I had Katie's two doctors write up.
The
Katie goes to
Texas
a low vision specialist and a regular ophthalmologist. And I had all of them write the recommendations for her.
Riker goes to a retinal specialist and she's floored by what the school is not giving.
Ask her to go with you to the IEP or something.
Yeah, right. She's in Madison, so she's not in our state.
Well, I would have her...
Conference.
And have her write a letter stating what recommendations she feels he needs.
Also, because he's
going to lose his vision.
Yes. No, because he don't usually take... Like a doctor's not
going to
tell
him
to teach.
Then he does need it.
Well,
because he needs to learn it. I know, that's what I'm saying. He's going to need it. And if he's going to learn it better at the point where he's got some vision, then so be it. He's going to need it. Then it's what, you're going to not give it to him now, and then you have to start to teach him something different when he's 17 or 18?
They were going to do it in eighth grade.
That's a farce. They need to give it to him now. And it's the law. You know, that's what I'm saying, is Debbie Stein and someone else, you know, someone else.
The law says that you can be eligible based off of a prognosis of a deteriorating condition. So, to prepare for future use. So it's in the actual eligibility, so they should be addressing that.
Yeah.
And they're not addressing anything for the future.
Right.
Well,
he's
doing Braille off the iPad.
Yeah, he's doing visual Braille. That's just kind of
almost useless. Yeah. That's kind of pre-vet Braille.
I mean, I'm doing visual Braille,
I'm
not going to lose my vision.
Right.
Yeah.
That
I know of.
I think one thing is also, with Sebastian's situation, we wanted to get some occupational type therapy done, and that's probably called more like orientation mobility in the Illinois and the Midwest. But we had no problem with that in San Francisco, where we used to live. But in Chicago, with the Chicago public schools, the only occupational therapy we get is to be very narrow focused, maybe because Chicago doesn't have any money, and it has to be very education related.
Because you're
so,
in CPS.
And
that has to come from a script from a doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even sometimes doesn't, you know, doesn't help. We've had times where, I guess, we found out last year we did the 3-year IEP, the really long one, that something about occupational therapy that wasn't even written into the IEP. You know, she and I, it's the person from the 3 years ago, and, you know, I mean, we just about swore that IEP. And that's actually the previous IEP, I'm pretty sure I dropped a, you know, on the R-rated word because I was really just that fed up with it.
Riker doesn't get OT through the school. They said he doesn't qualify. I have to pull him and take him to a separate facility to get OT at a hospital where he qualifies. We have the medical card, so they have to do a qualification. Every 3 months he has to be retested for them to pay for it. However, I don't know if Illinois is paying, but in theory, that's how they pay for it. And he qualifies. Every 3 months he qualifies. He has sensory issues. He qualifies for that. His fine motor is not the best. He qualifies for that. They didn't even assess him for OT. I told them I wanted an assessment before kindergarten. And they said, well, 3 years ago,
the OT observed him in the classroom and said he was fine.
Okay, 3 months, right? Okay, yeah, right. It could have been 3 months ago. It still shouldn't make a difference.
There wasn't even an assessment.
Yeah.
She just
sometimes
you're
creative with these things. One of the things that we did with IEPs, and this was after my longtime girlfriend, John Yagi, who's Sebastian's mom, we're watching something about what's a really famous autistic woman?
Temple Grandin.
Yeah. About how the thing she said in one of the PBS interviews after she was on one of the PBS specials is that we have to get kids with various needs, the needs they want, so they're able to survive, and they have to be able to do the stuff in science. You know, she may drop Temple Grandin in the middle of this IEP. I'm not sure if it really kind of sunk in all that all that was involved. That we have to just sometimes just be the blanky jackass and assist all this stuff. When it came to occupational therapy, the way that we're actually kind of doing it now is we found an end run to get into it. We're making sure that he's prepared for the current year, the next year, so that he's in physics now, so it's a little more gross motor skills, not so fine motor skills. But with chemistry, we had some work on skills, so he'd be ready for chemistry. He'll probably be taking biology as a senior, because that's how they do physics, chemistry, and then kind of whatever you do, the AP courses for physics again, and biology senior year. But we'll have him continue to review all the little things that you need, because with biology, you need to be able to do the dissection and all that. And these things are, maybe he might cut his hands or so forth, and you're good. And you have to not be afraid to yell at people and know what to yell at people. Especially if there's themselves in our class when there's a mind involved. Should I be glad that they let him use a knife, or should I be yelling at them? I don't know.
I think they do it on the computer now.
Some of them. You can opt out of the actual physical dissection.
I don't think it bother.
Virtual labs.
Sebastian and I in San Francisco at a museum took apart a cow eye.
What, Amy? What?
Gooey.
Really?
It was kind of gross.
My favorite, I had my first year teaching, I had one who was dissecting the dog shark. And so I was going to be in there to help, help her navigate and describe stuff to her. And she also had a trach. So she had one hand ungloved so she could plug her trach and talk to me. And then the other hand was doing everything.
The feel, yeah.
And I'm like, all right. So I'm like, all right. But I wasn't touching the sharks. Take it out, put it down our tray, and showed her where it was while I was standing perpendicular to her. She's this, hefty girl, and she just pulls the shark out of the bag and swings it up and slaps it on the table, and I'm standing perpendicular to the mouth of the shark that just juiced me. I smelled so bad. I had a splutter and turtleneck on it. It was in winter. And I take one step into my principal's office so I can go home and shower. He goes, "What is that?"
But don't be afraid to come up with specific goals. There is a program, I don't know how long it reaches, that Sebastian attended this past summer. There's extra seats in it. It was in the Detroit, Michigan area. So we had to, I'm actually able to drive, so I drove him out there. And two other kids from the northwest corner of Chicago, we're not here today, but they're in one of them attended the spring student conference, I guess it was in South Dakota,
Chicago. Yeah.
I forget what it's called, but I remember one of the girls from there. And so they did science for a week with both people who had visual impairments, with someone who does nature, who does bird observations through audio, through listening, which is, not my son's favorite thing. He thinks birding kind of boring, but at least, I was like, wow, they're getting out there doing stuff, that's good. And they were out in the woods and the water and waders and the whole nine yards. Of water was a theme this year, it'll probably change. But the purpose of this was for kids that even had, especially having subvision, he can kind of push his way through a lot of it. For kids having no vision, you want to give them the confidence sometimes, this stuff can happen in this program out and
it introduces it to them.
Yeah, it was a wonderful program. I don't know what age it starts, but it would be nice if something like that happened in Illinois,
I was going to say, it's too early for Riker, and maybe even Christopher, but NFB is doing the 10th anniversary of USLAM. The summer USLAM is a STEM camp. They're accepting 100 kids from across the country to go out to Baltimore. It's a week long. I figured I'm going to lose Katie for a week of Belle because she's going to probably want to go to USLAM.
I don't know. I don't know. She's already talking about Belle.
Good. But perhaps your son.
Is this related to the STEMIQ stuff at all?
I guess
that one comes in the other conference.
STEMIQ is younger kids and older mentors. USLAM is high school kids, and they're on a college campus.
For how long?
For a week.
Week.
In the dorm rooms, in the college, food court, it's insane and awesome.
Yeah.
And so
Katie had a great time.
And it's good to get that experience.
Yes.
My son's been around college campuses because his mom.
Right.
He does her PhD.
Travel to Baltimore on your own,
and
there's no parent chaperone. You go.
Yeah.
so much fun, and they took 10 teachers a couple of years ago, and so I was able to let go. And really funny, just running into Katie and then like two of my previous students that didn't know I was there. And I'm like, ha ha, your parents sent me to spy on you. And like, really? No! No way!
I do have a question. I don't know if you know the answer to this.
I'll make it up.
So a pet peeve of mine is hotels that don't have all their doors brailled. So how am I supposed to teach my son O&M in a real environment? So I know the ADA law says that there should be brailled, but if they're embossed, if the numbers are embossed, does that cover them?
No.
Okay, then Greg LaFlage is going to get a final nasty letter from me because we love the place. We go there a few times a year. And I put on, so when I go to
Christopher
hotel.
Christopher found ones that were wrong, braille.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Katie finds them all the time.
They use the stickers, you know, so they fall off. And
yeah.
So when I request a hotel room,
the little dots fall out of the plaque.
A sighted person just grabs one from another thing that's supposed to be an A, and it's not. It's a C or whatever.
So I put on my hotel reservations, like, my room must have a braille number. My son is blind. If we don't have a braille number in the room, he can't find his room. Which isn't really the case because
he's not alone necessarily.
Right.
But he could be able to go.
He's alone,
but
he should be.
You want him to build independence.
When we go somewhere that we're in room 2102, so if he were to escape or be found by someone, he could say.
Put it past.
Right.
Well,
one of my biggest fears is him stepping out of the house and going, you know,
wandering. Right, girl, go with anybody.
Some of us old guys learned to travel before they had all these ADA regulations.
You'd
ask directions like, well, you know, how far down the hall is it, or how many doors?
Right.
Is
how many doors?
You're like, well, I don't know. I'll have to go with you.
It's past the. It's like it's near the ice machine, or it's by the fire escape stairway, or it's by the room where the staff keep the cleaning supplies, or you know, something like. So
I'm supposed to walk by and smell it?
Well,
or?
No.
Because
like maybe it's a locked door you can't go in.
So you
look at landmarks that you might find useful. Like in this hotel, when you got off the elevator or the fifth floor, part of the hallway was real cold and then it got warm down the hall. And there's no ADA rule about changing temperature as a landmark, but it happens to be there, and so you use it.
Yep.
You know,
Katie's the kind of
smells all the time. And he's like,
yeah,
walks
that
places
too.
And he smells. He's like, Rick Grimes or
you know. Well, like this morning, I was a little bit confused going down to the meeting area because it was supposed to be in one room and ended up in the main area.
Yes.
And somebody with some vision was as confused as another lady and I were, and. So I'm going down the hall towards the ballroom, and, oh, hey, I'm smelling coffee. I think we're on the way.
Yeah.
But it's in five of the rooms, so, yeah. I mean,
but
it can't be your only basis for...
But
no, what I was saying is...
Braille embossed numbers aren't the same as Braille.
Okay, they can't get away. Because every time we go, I send them an email when I'm done. They always ask for a survey, and I am all about filling out those surveys. But I'll send them a separate email saying, okay, been there again. It's still there. I quote the ADA. This is specifically
Wisconsin Dells called Great Wolf Lodge.
Okay.
And Great Wolf Lodge is
amongst
the country. But,
yeah, okay.
I mean, there's other hotels, but this one in particular we frequent a lot.
Yeah. Their rigorous basis for lifeguarding is way above and beyond anywhere else we've ever been. They're constantly doing tests on their people.
Their guards.
And,
yep.
And the guards
the
look, they look yep. awkward. The guards look awkward because they have a 30-foot space that they're supposed to do this, and then before they get there, they have to do one of these and look at the two spots that
the blind spots.
Yeah.
They know them
the
all.
Blind spots, and they know every single spot. They look really awkward doing it because I used to be a lifeguard, and now I'm just sitting up there. I mean, you know, right. But they look really awkward doing it. But it's so rigorous the way that they do it.
So
like
have
going
you,
there.
Have you talked to the general manager about location?
Well,
I haven't spoken to them on the phone. Now everything else there, just for the record, is fantastic.
Your story time.
Oh yeah,
have you talked to like a director of this is just general skills? Have you talked to a director of customer service somewhere up the corporate chain?
That'll probably be the next step.
I would know that sooner myself because sometimes that helps get them.
I mean, we've been there 15 times, and she's probably sent three or four.
Yeah,
letters,
something stopped me from doing it the last time. I think because they had changed CEO.
because of the business I'm in, I have access to like insider information because I'm in that part of the finance industry. So I can get the CEO's email address.
Yeah. No, but you can go up and say, I want to speak to the VP of customer service, the VP of customer relations or customer issues. And that, at least from what I've seen from when people get only so far jumping around and doing an email so there's a trail is helpful, especially when people are dealing with the travel industry. I see I read stuff in the paper, you know, of people having issues, you know, these people that I assume are cited or not, have issues with travel industry because of big organizations that are their bureaucracies.
Right.
And
they're like, yeah.
And sometimes the guy's like, yeah, you did the right thing, you contacted that, you did the 3-mail, and we followed up with them, and, you know, we got an extra $200. And
so, yeah.
I think that's why I didn't, we were busy, but I didn't, because I wanted to make sure that the embossed numbers...
It has to be embossed and not engraved, the print digits. And
does that count instead of Braille?
Embossed?
No. They have to be embossed, raised, not engraved.
Right.
So that's for the print. And also, it has to be a certain size, like 5/8 of an inch high, and I don't know how far from left to right, but it has to be, you know, something. And then there's the type style has to be a simple one. You can't have something with a whole lot of serifs and curly Q's and everything like that.
But that can be instead of Braille?
No, in addition to Braille.
In addition to Braille. So I will say that their numbers are of a simple print, are of a good size, and the signs are easy to find.
Yes. They're
but that games. Little Braille sticker is supposed to be under it, and there's a space for it.
And that's only half the story to have it in print.
So here's what you do. You offer Chris's services to Braille all of their stickers.
I did in my letters, you know, quote the ABA law, like I pulled the language right off the internet, and did mention that if you cannot find someone locally to Braille your numbers, please contact the NFB, as they will direct you to someone
who will. Or who you can hire.
Clearly, they haven't called me up, so I will.
But like you said, we should print out these emails that we've sent to them before. Or they'll ask to see the VP of...
There are different kinds of sign processes and manufacturing processes to create Braille dots. Some work better than others. The one that's most common, they slam these little pellets into a plastic plaque, and then the dots fall off.
Right.
From by and by.
Yeah, this is a sticker. The gun. What did you call that?
Label maker.
Label maker.
Yeah.
So you label the 2401, and then if that gets pulled off by some other kid, you know, or whatever, then it's just lost until someone complains about it.
And then sometimes they mold it in, so it's just intrinsically part of the material, and those dots won't fall off.
Right.
And then if it's made of a sheet metal of some kind, you could. You sort of emboss the print
Braille
digits, and then you also have to make the print digits color contrasted.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are all kinds of materials that you can use for the purpose, and manufacturing processes and stuff like that.
Okay.
And some work better than others, and it gets horribly technical.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I worked in the ADA compliance at the Chicago Transit Authority for my last 14 years there.
Right.
So...
Yeah. Isn't there like a certain exact height that the stairwell grips have to be? I think I once worked at a place where we had to redo our stairwells because...
No, the stairway railings, the sign has to be, the center of the sign has to be 5 feet off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
The stairway railings have to have long horizontal pieces at both ends, and you can't have a square handrail, it has to be round.
Yeah.
So you're my guy when I get stuck here.
And so they're voluminous. And they tell you in quite specific detail what you have to do to make the building physically accessible. But they don't really deal with attitudinal stuff. So, you know, you go to a public place and the staff gets overly, shall we say, zealous about assistance and that. So then all they have to say is, well, we're concerned about your safety. You know, but so the stuff that has to do with blindness, it's not really definable because you can't. It's not as easily definable because it's not a building specification.
Yeah,
you
right.
can follow me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get into a lot more attitudinal kinds of questions than physical, you know, building materials and sign requirements. And
fortunately, in this case, everything else about the place is great. If I say I need a vacuum cleaner in the room because my son likes to vacuum and it calms him,
right.
I will get a vacuum cleaner.
He's got eight of them.
Yeah.
I don't know much about ADA in the Midwest, but I know that from hearing about this through the newspaper reports in San Francisco, where we live, we moved to Chicago in 2010. But in San Francisco, especially for wheelchair access, there were professional lawyers and professional clients that would go out and basically, you know, check places and make sure that there's wheelchair access.
Find the places that need updating.
Especially in really old buildings, which is not hard in San Francisco or in Chicago. Gosh, it's
to find,
Chicago.
Right, yeah.
You know, so many buildings that were spread over such a large area. And, I don't know if lawsuits are the way to do it out here eventually, or if, you know.
Because
lawsuits are the only way to really totally enforce the ADA, but the clients is cheaper. And educating a company is stressful, but it's cheaper than.
Yeah. It depends on the organization too. I know we belong to a private club, and the building is not ADA compliant, but we haven't changed it, right? So whenever we have to redo those stairs in the front,
it's gonna end. It has to be ADA compliant when it gets redone.
Yes.
So,
but it's historically, but we're also a private organization.
Right.
We're not.
I don't know. Aren't private organizations exempt, though, from a lot of that?
I think they might be. I know condo organization 2 years ago went through this when we were in a condo. Should we have a button on the door or not was sort of the discussion that I remember reading about in minutes. And they're like, technically we don't. And I'm thinking, technically, we could see like a bunch of jerks. But the counter side was, you're down in Chicago, do you always want that button to be on 24 hours a day and have some drunk or high person wander in at 2 a.m. And harass the staff.
Yeah.
Right.
It's there's that too. Can you have a button there that you can turn off, in those kind of situations. But this is just for the emergency the wheelchair access button.
Yeah.
Right.
And there actually were like one or two people with wheelchairs in the building. Like, you gotta have them, right?
Eventually you're gonna have a resident in this building that is gonna be needing this.
Yeah.
So you should be compliant. I mean,
yeah.
Is a condo building, private enough to be
this is a 50-story building, like almost 500 units.
There might be a threshold about small properties, but not your 50-story building.
That's what I thought. I didn't go to.
It's going
to
be like a public place,
right? Yeah, that's what I figured.
And so the ADA.
We're talking about a private club that has maybe 100 members here, it's very minuscule and is not.
And the fact that it's not ADA compliant is a problem for the organization because we can't rent out the lower hall because you can't get a wheelchair down there.
Right.
But we can't make the front of the building wheelchair accessible because the stairs are onto the sidewalk and then there's not enough room for a proper
ramp.
You can put a ramp.
You can't diagonally do it along
the No, like literally.
The front of the building is this far off of the actual city sidewalk.
So like you have a
So the, sta- the first
foot.
Stair is right on the sidewalk and then it's 2, 3, 4 right into the building.
And it was
1928
or something.
Yeah, and that's another thing is the facade of the building, if the building were to ever be refurbished or anything, So it's a lot of rigmarole.
Can you build a
maybe a side
sidewalk
entrance
out
right.
to
maybe
accommodate that or side entrance
right.
they do in D.C., I think, and some Chicago buildings,
yeah.
the older ones, right?
There are different kinds of approaches. And,
I think everybody else has exited.
Abandoned us,
So keep pressing along the IEP. It's a pain in the butt, but it pays off in time.
Yeah.
And,
I wish I didn't have like a full time job and two side things I did so that I could go to school every day and be like,
when my son was first doing this, I was working full time. I did it as I went to the ISP when I was a student, full time.